you're having a relaxed mind and a smile on your face. If not, then take a moment to smile and let us begin. Welcome everybody to Be Nudged by Maya. I'm Ritika, your host for the day. For our new listeners, firstly, a very warm welcome to the podcast. In this podcast, we're attempting to understand the enigma that is a human being. We delve into psychology and behavioral economics to understand why people do what they do. Why is this important, you may ask? This is important because as a marketer or as a business owner, irrespective of your profession, you will have to make choices for yourself and many times employ the art of persuasion to direct people's choices in a specific direction. Either way, to facilitate decisions, it is imperative to understand what goes in the mind while we are making decisions. And in this podcast, we'll be covering just that. So now, with that out of the way, let us start with today's episode. Today, we are going to discuss about nudges. Now, according to Google, nudges are like prodding gently with one's elbow in order to attract attention. Or simply put, it is a light touch or push. However, in the realms of behavioral economics, nudges, though still just a slight push, they are extremely powerful in directing decisions. Coined by Richard H. Taylor and Cass R. Sunstein in 2008 in their paper titled Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness, nudges are defined as any aspect of the choice architecture that alters people's behavior in a predictable way without forbidding any options or significantly changing the economic incentives. Now, to count as a mere nudge, the intervention must be easy and cheap to avoid. Nudges are non-mandates. Now, putting fruit at an eye level counts as a nudge, but banning junk food does not count as a nudge. Now, this might seem a little complicated, so let us simplify it and try to understand in a better manner. Now, it is natural for us to think that the decisions we take are governed solely by us. But that is not true. You see, decision-making does not happen in isolation. Our decisions are influenced by a myriad of factors. From the people around us to the environment we take decisions in, all of these impact the choices we make. Now, the environment that influences our choices or our decisions is called choice architecture. And the person who creates this architecture or this environment is called a choice architect. Now, simply put, a choice architect creates careful nudges to help us make better decisions. Now, to understand it in a better manner, let me give you a practical example. We are now going to see how Google uses choice architecture and nudges in its cafeteria. So, to give you a brief background, every year, US companies lose as much as $225 billion due to poor health and obesity. Adding insult to injury is a wellness industry where there has been a severe lack of creativity or even an attempt to understand human behavior. Now, a little while ago, I mentioned that decisions do not happen in isolation. More so, we take numerous decisions every day. And a lot of these decisions are selecting the food that we want to eat. But this decision, like many other decisions that we take, are influenced by a variety of factors. Few of them being hunger, or the choices we are presented with, and even the environment we are in. Now, all this make decision-making a little more arduous than it already is. Now, you see, our minds do not like to make a lot of effort. Instead, it relies on shortcuts or defaults to make an action. Thus, providing plentitude of information in the form of calories, ingredients, and other healthy food information seldom helps in forming new habits and replacing the older ones. Coming to Google, have you heard the term Google 15? Well, for those of you who haven't, It refers to the 15 pounds new Googlers add to themselves within 1 year of joining, gorging on all that free food Google has to offer. Who would like to have all that amazing food, right? But for an employer, this is a problem. Gaining weight may lead to health issues, which is certainly not ideal. Now the problem with the situation is, Google could not ban the tasty of fried food, nor it can dictate people and force them to choose salad over brownie. I, for one, would take offense at that. Keeping myself aside of the picture, essentially those two options would not work. A fine and coercion both are out of the picture from what could be a possible solution. Google did what they do best. They hyper-analyzed their cafeteria spaces and re-engineered them. But while re-engineering and analyzing, they took the help of behavioral economics. They re-engineered the cafeteria with subtle nudges to help their employees make healthier and better food choices. Now let us see what Google actually did to influence behavior. A little while ago, I mentioned the word choice architecture, and now we will understand what it means in this specific context. Just to recap, choice architect is a person who creates careful nudges to help people make better decisions. Now, Google used choice architecture to carefully display and place food items in a specific way. For this, at the start of the buffet, they displayed salads and vegetables. And as for the beverage section, they moved sodas to a lower shelf in the refrigerator. And not just that, they placed water on the shelf at the eye level. All this was done with an intent of letting people make healthier choices without forcing them to do so. The results of this experiment are worth noticing. The change in soda placement increased water intake by 47%, while calories from drinks fell by 7%. This was not all. Google has a wide assortment of M&Ms kept in bulk. People can take whichever flavor they like in a 4-ounce cup. On observing, these 4-ounce cups were replaced by individually wrapped packages. This seemingly simple change led to a massive difference in calorie intake. Unlike the earlier 4-ounce cup and 300 calories it had, an individual wrapper just contained 130 calories, which is a difference of 58%. Another thing Google did was, they used persuasion to impact decisions. Now, persuasion is effective when done in a right way and at the right time and also at the right place. What Google did was, it used images and text to persuade people to take specific, not so popular vegetables. What they did was, they showcased vegetables like beetroot, turnip, etc. and made a poster of them, framing them as vegetable of the day. The poster was accompanied by some trivia about the vegetable and was placed right next to the beetroot dish. Now you see, Google did two things here. One is that it made beetroot vegetable of the day, which makes beetroot look a little special, right? And who doesn't like specials? Now, second thing they did was, instead of mailing people about the vegetable of the day, the poster was displayed right next to the dish. That is the place where people will be most receptive to this information. And because now they already have a plate in hand and they're standing next to a counter, all they had to do is reach to the dish and put it on their plate with minimum effort. What this did was, it increased the number of employees trying the featured dish by 74% and increased the average amount each person served themselves by 64%. People do like specials, right? Now, if you are not convinced with the immense power of tiny nudges yet, then maybe this helps you get convinced. In their micro kitchens, Google replaced the chocolate in the gravity dispensers with cereals. And this small nudge caused a huge difference. Jennifer Kukowski, heading people analytics at Google, says that in 7 weeks, New York Googlers consumed 3.1 million fewer calories with a seemingly small change. Now, in all these instances, if you see, there is one thing common. The intent was one, that is, to help people make better, healthy choices. And in order to do so, they did not remove desserts. Neither the cafeteria abandoned tasty, delicious, and high-calorie food. All they did was they created context, changed perceptions, altered presentations, and rearranged food items. All this leading to significant changes in how people behaved. Now, nudges are diverse and scalable. They can work in almost every field, not just in this specific context. They can work in marketing, tax, and even public policies. Governments all around the world are turning to behavioral economics and nudge theory when traditional policies fail. The UK government's behavioral science unit is probably one of the most recognized public policy nudge units out there. Their work includes improving tax compliance and also significantly increasing organ donor registrations. According to a report by the NHS, 3 people die every day because of a lack of organ donors. However, recent polls suggest that 9 out of 10 people support organ donation, but less than 1 in 3 decide to register. Even though people support donation, there is a gap between intention and actual results. Now, NHS decided to incorporate some behavioral economics into this. It worked with the UK Behavioral Insights team to solve this problem, joining hands with multiple government organizations. Randomized control experiments, or RCTs, were conducted on a high-traffic website of Government of UK. This website encourages organ donations amongst people. Now, all the visitors that landed on this website were shown 6 different kind of messages nudging them to opt for organ donation. You will be surprised to know that the message "you could save up to 9 lives" did not perform that well. The one that did was a message evoking reciprocity and individual interest. It said, "If you need an organ transplant, would you have one? If so, please help others." If this message was used for the entire year, it could have led to approximately 96,000 extra registration compared with the control or original message that was displayed on the website. That is the power of a simple change in a message displayed on a website. Now, nudges are seemingly small, but work in powerful ways. In this podcast, we discussed a few applications of nudges. But this is only a speck in the possibilities that occur with nudges. Marketing, taxation, pension schemes, shopping, all industries can use nudges to lead to better decision-making. Government see nudges as a cost-effective method to improve policy adoption by gently pushing their citizens in the right direction. But these methods have also been subjected to harsh criticism. Firstly, people wonder if these nudges are too manipulative or coercive in nature. Secondly, the people constructing these nudges have to rely on some amount of guesswork around what people want and what people really need. Also, it is often observed that nudges are often ignored by a couple of people, thereby questioning the effectiveness of nudge. But this is a common misunderstanding. You see, nudges are designed to be cheap and avoidable. They're suggestive in nature and they're non-mandates. People willfully ignoring are opting out of nudges are in fact acting in accordance with their own interests and beliefs. And that is not at all wrong. Therefore, it is important to understand that the true effectiveness of a nudge should be measured by overall social good it has created and not only by opt-ins or completion rates. That said, there are two important points to consider before utilizing nudges. Number one is that which nudge works and which does not can only be understood by a series of tests. Just like the NHS, who tested multiple messages before concluding which one is the right one, and also what they might have perceived would perform the best, did not do so. So testing is important to conclude on which is the appropriate one. Now that brings me to the second point. In this episode, we saw that nudges, though appear to be small and trivial, they have magnificent impact on how people behave. They're extremely powerful. And with that kind of power comes the ability to do good and to do bad. It is our responsibility that whenever we employ nudges, we ensure that it is only used to make things better for people and to help them take better decisions. With that, we now come to an end to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast and found it insightful. If you have any suggestions or any advice or have any stories to share, you can connect with me on our website, thinklikemaya.com, or connect with me personally on LinkedIn. I'm there by the name Ritika Swaroop Srivastav. So we will meet soon with new stories from the world of human behavior. Until then, be courageous, be human, and think differently or think like Maya. This is Meenaj, and this is Ritika, your host, signing off. Until next time.